time to bury the tired narrative and uncover stories not typically heard, but stories that need to be heard. Right or wrong, life or death, this isn't your typical law show. This is Big Angry Law with Charles Big Angry Adams on KPRZ 950. Now, Charles Adams.
Thank you all for joining us. This is Charles Big Angry Adams, and I know it's been a cocktail of narcissism, ennui, and just not going into the studio that we haven't had a lot of guests, but we are starting the show with a wonderful guest, a comedian or comedian, I don't know which she prefers, from New York, Kieran Feehan, and she is, I would describe her as a post-feminist, non-corporate comic, but that's just me. I'm sure she has better descriptors for herself, but more importantly, she has a show at the Secret Group on the 21st at 8 p.m. that is not yet sold out, which speaks to the stupidity of the Houston audience for not buying those tickets up, because y'all are all going to hear corporate comedy at the Improv, which is, of course, crap comedy. Kieran, thank you so much for joining us.
I love that intro, Charles. Thank you so much for having me. This is fun. I'm happy to be one of your, you know, a guest, since you've
if this is fun for you, I hate to see what is not fun for you, because this is really just talking to a loudmouth, insufferable lawyer who does talk radio purely because he doesn't like looking at himself in the mirror anymore. And of course, this
I love lawyers. Okay. I really do. I have a new lawyer friend, and we go do kettlebell workouts together. She's the strongest lawyer I've ever met in my life. Like, she walks around like a Flintstone in these classes. She's incredible. I love a lawyer.
When you say
I don't know enough about the law.
Does she walk around like Wilma or Betty, or does she walk around like Fred? Because there's a big spectrum there.
I mean, well, like, I would give her the female Flintstone.
Okay. Do you know what kind of lawyer she would be? I mean, there's many.
She's in real estate law.
Oh, that sounds awful. I just hired a lawyer that did real estate law for 5 years. And he is working in my criminal defense practice. And he tells me every day how much funner it is to read, you know, police reports about people behaving horribly, allegedly, of course, because yeah. I'm Perry Mason and all my clients are innocent. But he talks about real estate, and it was really just evicting poor people out of their apartments and then doing paperwork. Is that the stuff she does, or do y'all not talk about it?
You know, as a narcissist, I don't even ask that many questions about what her day-to-day is. I just think it's cool she has a degree. But I think that I like knowing her, because when, you know, they come around and, like, raise my rent every 2 to 3 years or whatever, she's got this just plethora of law jargon that she can throw in an email for me, and she helps me negotiate. So for me, she's a great resource.
That is true. And it's always nice to have a lawyer that's not going to send you a bill to send an ugly email or respond.
Yeah.
Because corporate America, they got their lawyers, and
They certainly do.
They're awful. Like, they're the kind of people that if you see them in a bar, you want to punch them, and you're doing the math, like, how likely am I going to get sued or arrested, and how much fun is this going to be? I found hard. The only real bio I found of you was either done by a seventh grader writing a book report on you, or a bot. And it was just, you know, she's a comedian who makes jokes. It was pretty funny. I should send you the link. But all I got was, in the article, it said 2 different years for your birth date. There was no information.
Well, go with the one that makes me younger.
Well,
go with the later birth date.
Obviously. I wasn't even going to mention the year. But, you know, it was what, 93, 94? But
yeah, 2001.
There you go. You just turned 21. Hey, congratulations.
That's right.
Has that been fun?
Thank you.
But it said
you
were from New York, but it didn't indicate the state or the city. Are you from
that's so wrong. Well, I suppose, like, according to New York law, you know, after you lived here for 10 years, you're a New Yorker, and I've lived here for 20. But I am originally from Massachusetts, and I still have a 617 area code telephone number. And I'm still like a diehard, you know, not diehard, but Boston sports fan. So I'm a New Yorker, but I grew up in Massachusetts.
So did you grow up in Boston or around Boston or somewhere else?
Not Boston proper, like an hour south on the beach, a little town called Marshfield. It was near Plymouth where our forefathers landed.
No, I know exactly. And I took my kids to Thanksgiving on Plymouth once. It was.
Did you do the Plymouth plantation?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was very American of me. I felt it was probably
very patriotic. Yeah.
It was probably the whitest I've ever felt in my life, and I'm pretty damn white, so that's saying something. But it's so. I just cursed. I'll have to bleep that out. It's so incredibly cold there. Like my first when I moved up there. It was, you know, I'd always lived in the South, whether Texas or Louisiana, and it had this great experience with the movers. I had two little kids and a wife. The movers drove my moving van into a bridge on Memorial, just on the Charles, and wanted to charge me for the 4 hours that they were stuck there. And they didn't understand that I wasn't going to pay it until I was very clear that I wasn't going to pay it, and they were going to pay for my stuff that was broken. But that was my day one in Boston and in Cambridge, and it was frustrating. But it's wonderful for 4 months out of the year, but for the rest, it gets dark at 4, and I don't see how everyone doesn't kill themselves living there through the winter.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, like you said, you were brought up in a more temperate region. I'm so used to living through those winters, and you find the joy somewhere in the winters, and we're of the mindset you can't really appreciate the warm weather without having gone through like 2 to 3 months of brutal cold. It's psychotic.
So you have a better appreciation for the sunlight, right? Being out in it afterwards.
Right. After like going through just like a cold, dark winter where you're right, it does get darker earlier. But I, luckily with comedy, I do try to fill up my calendar with like Southern dates. As you mentioned, the 21st, I'll be at the Seeker Group. I try to go south or to California, you know, somewhere. I'm like, hey, is there any scene in Puerto Rico right now? I can go tell some jokes there in February. You know?
Wow. Yeah, Puerto Rico. Lots of gnats on the beach, I hear. But hey, we're with Karen Feehan, the Seeker Group, on the 21st, just in a couple of days, a great venue and a great comedian. We're going to be back with her again in just one moment.
This is Big Angry Law on KPRC 950.
And it is still me, disappointingly, but excitingly, we are still with Karen Feehan, the comedian, playing on the 21st at the Seeker Group, a great venue there in East Downtown, as you nerds call Edo. And should be correctly called a gentrifying horror story, a part of this city. But it is not sold out. If you don't buy the tickets, it's only because you're stupid. And it's really, I want to make that clear. Because this comedian, I mean, very funny, right? But of course you're going to say that, right? You're not going to have a comedian on and say, well, this person ain't funny at all. Why is she speaking into a microphone? But legitimately, you know, y'all know, I talked poorly about Trump throughout his administration, and y'all called the radio station and told everybody how much you hated me for so long. Y'all know I'm going to tell you the truth, whether it works in your affirmation echo chamber or it doesn't, and I will tell you the truth. She is very funny, but she doesn't just do comedy. I mean, you got to do a lot of things in this tough economy, in this tough world, and she lives in New York City, so I don't imagine how anyone without $10 million in the bank does that. But she does a lot of things. She's got a podcast, Only Feehans, and she is a writer. You want to tell us about your podcast?
Sure. I pretty much started it during the pandemic. I've been, you know, sort of in and around the comedy scene and podcast scene, especially in New York. I do the Jim and Sam show a lot. Jim Norton has a pretty big fan base, and he has another podcast called the Chip Chipperson podcast.
Right.
And so I sort of started becoming like a regular in both of those shows. So I started building this podcast audience, but I didn't have my own podcast. And I was writing at Paramount Network, just like copy and like different like art and like editorial things. And they laid off 85% of their freelancers like the second week of the pandemic or something. And I was a lucky one of them. So it was like, you know, what am I going to do? So the podcast, it's doing well. I typically have on a different comedian guest every week, but I've had on MMA fighters, different athletes, models, rappers. But it's very, very casual, laid-back setting. We record at my apartment, and my dog ruins about every fifth episode.
I had to tell my dog that I was tell my wife that I was recording, so the dog, she could keep the dog a little bit quiet. But dogs are an important part of the household. What kind of dog do you have?
Oh, she's a 65-pound Shepherd Lab mix.
Oh, that sounds great for I assume you're in an apartment in New York City. That sounds like the perfect dog for an apartment in New York City.
Well, I'm doing well. So I have two dog beds, but of course she prefers to sleep on my bed or like the living room couch. But it's like a really dog-friendly neighborhood. I live in Battery Park, and there's lots of lawns. We're by the water. And there's lots of big grassy areas, and there's a lot of dog parks. They're concrete, and like those are like the sanctioned, you know, by the city or whatever dog parks. But Mabel and I are rule breakers, so we go run on the lawns that we're not allowed to run on.
So they don't let dogs go on the grass at the
parks?
There's
like a few specific areas that they like fence off for them, and they are, but there's some that they aren't, and we just... There's signs, but like my dog, I don't know if your dog can read, but my dog can't read. So okay. I don't know how she's expected to follow these rules.
Right. Well, my dog actually can read. I mean, he's a genius.
What do you have? A golden doodle? What do you got?
No, we have always had shelter dogs until this last dog that we got about a year ago. We had an 18-year-old Australian Shepherd and an 18-year-old Chihuahua mix.
Oh my God. Chihuahua that's Papillon so long. Mix.
But that, yeah, they both made it. The if my wife heard me talking about this, she'd be upset. I spent about $40,000 in the last year of the Chihuahuas mix. But we actually bought a dog, and my wife got lambasted by someone on Facebook for doing that. But we would try to adopt a small dog, but these adoption agencies in the intervening 18 years have become somewhat oddly militant about who can adopt the dogs and agreeing to stuff. And we tried a few times and she gave up, but we got something called a beaver terrier that looks like a Bewer terrier, but it's like an offshoot of the Yorkshire terrier. He's all of about 4.5 pounds, and he thinks he's savage, but he's tiny, and he has a broken leg.
You bought a guinea pig.
No, he will fight your German Shepherd. He's that not bright, but he has a broken leg.
My dog's currently undefeated at every dog park in Lower Manhattan. I just like to put that out there along the airwaves.
I'm not saying your dog wouldn't win. I mean, obviously the Shepherd wins against the 4-pound terrier. I mean,
she's so gentle with little dogs. She actually loves them. She's like very cute to watch.
Yeah, he learned the hard way at it. They're on in West Hollywood, right off the Sunset Strip. There are right on the Sunset Strip next to the Tower Hotel. There is a dog park, and when he was about 6 months old, a dog bit him and picked him up, a big dog.
Owner
sat there and watched while I dealt with it. But, you know, I mean, you know that dog park. There are dogs that are not socialized properly.
Tricky.
And people
it's
want
tricky.
Their dog. Right.
Because you've not only got different dogs with different personalities, and not every dog is going to get along. That's just the fact of it.
You don't know.
But then you've got conflicting, you know, dog parent philosophies and techniques. And that's when you get into some arguments, I find.
I find that I just don't want to interact with people at dog parks, and it makes it easier. He's had a broken leg. He's had 4 surgeries in the last 3 or 4 months. It's been expensive. But so he hasn't been to a dog park because finally they closed the wound in a while. But they are, you got to socialize dogs. Dogs have to be around people and other animals. One of my business partners has a cane corso of my non-lawyer businesses. He has a cane corso that has to go in the cage before I go in the house because he will absolutely just eat me. And I think he smells the lawyer, but it is
I have like a reel on my Instagram, like doing a little bit of crowd work with a woman with a cane corso, because she was like, "Oh, I have a cane corso," and I just immediately went, I was like, "Are you a drug dealer? Like, what are we? Why do you need this weapon of an animal to defend your property? They're huge."
Well, so he has a little petite, very beautiful wife, and they live in a transitioning neighborhood. They just bought a house in, and she was walking the dog. And two.
What a euphemism!
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going from having a lot of crime to having less crime. And okay. She was walking the dog, and two guys came up to her and said, "We need a glass of water. Take us in your house." And she said, "My dog's not nice," and they did not listen. And continued to aggressively approach her, and then realized the hard way that he had been professionally trained and was not nice, and then went scurrying down the road. So there are some upsides. I'm sure with your shepherd, it gives you an added confidence, especially like in Battery Park, and I spent a lot of time in New York, and I don't feel, you see a lot of weirdos as of lately that are unchucked, and that's more from Reagan doing away with mental institutions or institutionalization. It's just kind of snowballed, especially in New York City. But you talk about the crime. And I don't see, the crime for me isn't as palpable when I go as the New York Post or the media would suggest, but clearly crime has become a much more serious problem. And I'm friends with Colin Quinn. I'm sure you're friends with Quinn. And,
oh, I love Colin.
Yeah, you know, Quinn told me a story we were talking in this bar in like North Tribeca, told me a story about just in the 80s, you couldn't go out in what is now called Tribeca after 8 p.m. at night, or you would absolutely get mugged every time. Do you feel like your German Shepherd keeps you safer when you walk him or walk her? I'm sorry.
Her. She definitely does. This neighborhood is like Disney World. It's like it's night and day from what it was before. But still, yes. I just feel like having a big dog, you're not the ideal victim. You know what I mean? There's too many drunk, dumb, like single, like Bambi deers out there. You're not going to pick the girl who has her wits about her and has a big scary black dog. She's just not the one you're going to mug or try to. I hope, you know what I mean?
Do you and love Mabel? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I love it. I love it so much. I was just in LA for a week and I don't hate LA. One of my favorite things about LA is the weather. And when I was there, it was rainy and cold all week. And I was like, oh, come on. Like this is, I love the compactness of New York, you know?
I hate to cut you off. When we get back, if you'll stay with us one more segment or a few more, we're going to talk about the compactness of New York City, and we're going to hear more about Mabel. We'll be back in just one moment.
Big Angry Law with Charles Adams. Big Angry Law with Charles Adams continues.
What is it tonight? Please just tell me what the hell is wrong. Do you want to eat? Do you want to sleep? Do you want to drown? Just settle down, settle down, settle down.
Charles Adams, once again, I'm still joined by Kieran Feehan. That's Kerryn Feehan. Did I do that right, the last name?
Feehan.
I'm not the brightest. She is right here on the 21st, coming up this weekend at the Secret Group, one night only, 8 p.m., one of my two favorite comedy venues. Y'all know Rudyard's The Riot is my other one, the only non-corporate comedy in town. It's not sold out. If you haven't bought tickets, again, I've said it once, I'll say it again. If you just tune in, it's because you're stupid. When we went to break, because she's hilarious, she was talking about the compactness of New York City is something she loves as compared to Los Angeles. When you say compactness, you just mean the ability to get around and live where you want to go? There's Mabel. Tell her thank you for joining us.
she's a guard dog, so somebody has gotten off the elevator. So she will send a few barks, but then she's going to lay back down. There she goes. She's good. Exactly. Just especially for, comedy. I've just been doing it in New York for so long and I know so many people and it's just such a part of my routine to go from like 2 to 3 different clubs every night or like a bar show here or Brooklyn and then back or the Upper West Side. And it's all via like train or Uber or whatever. And then, yeah, in LA, the second I get there, I'm just like, you have to have a car. You have to have a car to enjoy your life here because things are just more spread out.
And even if you have a car, like I'm going to LA all next week, even if you have a car, if you have to go from West Hollywood, where I mean, I think the best comedy clubs are, you know, I think the store, the upstairs at the comedy store.
Yeah.
My favorite comedy club in the world. But if you have to go from West Hollywood to Santa Monica, depending on the time of day, it could take you 30 minutes or it could take you 4 hours. And that's what I mean, we got bad traffic in Houston, but it's nothing like Los Angeles traffic. I've got meetings all over that city for a non-media, non-lawyer business I have. And it's just trying to figure out where to stay and how to get from one meeting and like, I don't know,
right
somewhere. It's crazy.
Yeah, if you don't have really the lay of the land, you know, I feel like you have to, and I never give it enough time because I want to get back to New York. I want to get back to my dog and my life and my stuff here. But I feel like you got to just really know the best spot. I love Santa Monica. If I could like build a little routine and like live there and then, but yeah, the traffic is wild and so unpredictable. Like it just doesn't make sense. And nobody can drive because everybody has a spec script in the back of their Uber that they want to sell you. And it's like,
there is a lot of that, a lot of sad desperation. That's why I told my wife very early on, let's live in Houston where I can make a bunch of money and I'll take you wherever you, she loves New York, right? I don't know which one she likes more. You know, for me, like people that hate LA, I think like, you ain't been to the right part of LA. LA is really, really nice. In Southern California,
it's really nice. And the people are great. Like I like so many people who live in New York. I have like a lot of friendships with a lot of comics that are so funny and great to be around.
Right. It's an exciting town, but New York City, I almost had a Judge Judy type show. Charlamagne the God's agent heard me.
Oh, cool.
I was on the Breakfast Club. It led me to, and right before COVID, like I had the meeting at 30 Rock, you know, the NBC Universe, you were in there and she's got all our Emmys on the VP with all the Emmys. And it was good. They were talking about Jerry Springer's had a judge show, the set there in Connecticut. And I get back from that meeting, they'd put us up at the Plaza and my wife's already looking at like apartments on it. And I'm like, look, until I'm not paying for these kids, we're not getting a place in New York City. But there, I mean, for me, you know, I like Houston because, you know, I was a policeman here. I was a judge here. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest, I could probably do some crazy stuff and get away with it here. And I just love, I mean, I like being cold, but I like being artificially cold, like walking out, you know, it's probably 80 degrees right now here. And, you know, I could just turn on the air conditioner, but when it's that brutal New York, which isn't as bad as Boston, but that brutal New York, just, I have to walk two blocks in this mixture of dirty sleet and rain to get to wherever I'm going. And you just feel,
I just pretend that I'm like Sue Aiken in like Alaska. Like I've been layering clothing my whole life. So you prepare for the elements and then you forge through them. And then when you come back to your home and make yourself whatever it is, a coffee, a hot chocolate, you light a candle. You preheat your home. Like my heat is very good. And then you come back and it's like, it's the yin and the yang. It's the good and the bad.
Do you have air conditioning in your apartment?
Yeah. I mean, it was hot this summer. We were hitting like 90s.
A lot of them don't though. Like when I moved to Cambridge, we had heat, but we didn't have, and this was like 2001. This was right before 9/11, which was a weird time there.
Did they want you to buy a window one?
Well, I had to find one, but they're having a like brownouts and a heat wave, and I had to drive like an hour out to find a window unit, and it was pretty awful. But I mean, you're fancy. You've got AC and heat. Look at you. Yeah. Now the rent there is pretty insane. Do you own or are you renting?
I'm renting right now. I love the building. There's a pool and a gym and the view is just like so nice. Like you don't get like water views in Manhattan unless you're way downtown.
Right.
But I am considering other neighborhoods like Long Island City or Williamsburg and Brooklyn that have a similar aesthetic but are a little less expensive.
So I've got to assume that Long Island, your desire to move out there, it's got to be because that new congressman, right? George Santos has inspired you to move out to Long Island and pursue your dreams of making believe and crafting a story. And I mean, no.
I actually said Long Island City, which is a borough in near Manhattan.
Oh, don't be parsing. Don't be parsing. Okay. Is it not on Long Island? Is Long Island City not on Long Island? No. What sense does that make? Like, how does that make any sense? Look, we're going to have this place. We're going to call it Long Island. And we're going to have a city. We're going to call it Long Island. It's like Kansas City being in Missouri. I mean, what idiot? Well, we're right on the border here, but we're going to call it
the logic.
Right. So Long Island City, I've learned something new today, not on Long Island. And you're not inspired by George Santos. What do you have against George Santos? Like, what did he do to you? Right. I mean, he's got to have given you some great, you might not do political comedy, but if you did, I mean, it's got to be some great bits, right?
Just a plethora, not me, but for others.
But did you see the video that emerged yesterday of him in front of Trump Tower waving a Confederate flag? That was unexpected, right?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, when he was still using the name Anthony DeValder, he apparently thought it would be a good idea. This was, I guess, before he was a gay Jewish Latin man, so 3 years ago.
Right, so many cultures.
Yeah. It's I mean, I respect the grift. I guess I'm a lawyer. I mean, he sold a great lie, but there you go. We won't get too political. We'll get back to, so where is Long Island City? Is it in Manhattan or where is it?
It's just over. There's a bridge called the Pulaski Bridge that goes from Greenpoint, Brooklyn to Long Island City. And then you can take the 7 train and it'll take you directly to Midtown Manhattan, like 42nd Street. And it's like a 7-minute train ride. But yeah, it's Queens. It's technically Queens, the borough of Queens. But it's right on the water, and there's a lot of new buildings there with, like, you know, roof deck pools and dog parks.
They're telling all the poor people in Queens they've got to move further out, and they're moving in the fancy comedian artists who will then be followed by the robber barons, and then it's all over for Queens, is what you're
right
saying.
Right on our tail.
Yeah, they are always right on our tail. They're currently bankrupting America.
Other than, like, certain people, like, I don't know if you know who Sypha Sounds is. He's a pretty popular.
I only know because he just played the Riot, which is another comedy room that I can walk to just this weekend. And Mo Amir and I are friends.
Oh, I didn't know.
And Mo, like, came over with him, and I was going to go, but then the wife said no, so I didn't go, you know. But,
He's great. He was, like, a DJ in the 90s, and he had, like, DJ money. He used to live in the building where I live now. But typically, other than Colin doesn't live far from me, not to give out all this information, but most comics don't live in my neighborhood. They're more like, you know, Greenwich Village, West Village, East Village. Like, that's where most of them, I feel like, are concentrated.
Because most of them are broke. Colin married well recently, but, you know, and he's still got all that remote control money. I mean, that MTV long green for them. I mean, Colin, obviously, very successful.
Colin is the hardest working man in show business. I got to go see. My friend and I, we're going to go see his new show at the Cherry Lane.
Yeah, he is a... So my wife is a huge fan. She's a huge comedy fan herself. One time I fell asleep and while we were in the front row watching Jim Norton, and he lambasted me. I'm huge. I'm like 6'8" and most like The Cellar. I can't even do The Cellar. Like Colin, it's too tight and I feel claustrophobic and I want to punch everybody. But you know what? Hey, we are. But Colin, So I met Colin through her just fandom, and we became friends, and then she was embittered by, I'm his fan, and now y'all are buddies. Well, I'm sorry. Winning acerbic personality. But we are still talking to Karen Feehan. Thank y'all for joining us. It's January. January 21st at the Secret Group, 8 p.m. Buy the tickets. We'll be back in just one moment.
Big Angry Law with Charles Adams on KPRC 950. You're listening to Big Angry Law on KPRC 950.
And we're back at Big Angry Law Radio. We are still joined by the wonderful comedian. Karen, do you like comedian or comedian? Do you like to gender your title or you don't care?
I don't care. I think comedian is just fine.
Okay.
Okay. Try not to think about it.
Okay, good. We think about words a lot, right? I don't know if you saw the USC social work is no longer going to use the word field of study because they find it to be a new... We're always looking for things to get mad about. And I just, why be mad, right? But
why not field of study? What is it? What is
apparently
it?
Apparently, it has connotations of the horrible institution of slavery, despite it having no relationship in the etymology with an actual field. They're going to not use.
I mean, that's kind of reaching a little.
Oh yeah, it's insane. They're going to use the word practicum now. Practicum. Like, who wants to say that practicum word generally? Right. It's.
I mean, well, it ends with, you know, that suffix. Tom is pretty offensive to me. I hope
it's not, because that would suggest a very bleak life. But yes, it is. We like to give
it. When it comes to my curricula, Tom, I don't want to hear about any practicum.
There you go. There you go. And she is spelling for the radio, for the FCC, if they're tuning in. She is spelling come C-O-M-E, not that other way. Let's make that clear.
Obviously.
But before we dive back into this wonderful, I mean, what a wonderful conversationalist I am. And she's keeping up. No, I'm kidding. She is appearing on the 21st, this weekend, 8 p.m. at the Secret Group. It has not sold out yet, which is, it's weird when I see a show that should sell out immediately. It's not. And if y'all don't buy tickets, you're stupid. And I want to say this. I mean, most of y'all are stupid anyway. You're listening to me and just to get mad at me. But really, y'all should go see her because she is that funny. But let's get back. Yeah, so it seems like in this country, we have incentivized recently finding things to get pissed off about, finding things to be upset about and to tie it to some sort of ism. And if you can, you're going to get academic attention. It doesn't sound like you're particularly political, but over there in Davos, I hate that word too, because how do you pronounce it? But they're literally having entire panels on how to justify restricting American free speech. And there are journalists on those panels, like one from the New York Times, that are all about it. And as a comedian, that's got to weigh on your practice, right? And I think being a comedian is a practice, like a lawyer or a doctor. It's a true profession. You're speaking into a microphone and you're making a room full of people that don't want to laugh. But do you worry about your language now more than you did when you started doing this?
I suppose I should, but I don't. I sort of just don't care. I do whatever I want, but it is kind of like the not to sound like such a tool, but like, the climate for comics is a little dicey right now. Just if you consider the Chris Rock thing that happened, my friend Ariel Elias, like one of her videos went viral. Someone threw a beer at her.
So you're talking about the slap of Chris. So I saw Chris at the store maybe 4 days before the slap, right? We just happened to be out there. We go out a lot. And he was working on his new material. So do you think that any male-to-male interaction, if someone is insulting your wife, is off the table completely? Like, there's never an excuse?
Listen, I feel like if you're going to talk about a guy's wife, like at a bar, like, yeah, you should be ready to get punched in the face. But when you're at a performance where, you know, you should be able to take things in stride and, like, creative license is given and, like, they're all entertainers and performers. They should understand the concept of satire, whatever the hell it is, like that there's a time and a place. You know what I mean?
So comic, let's say you're at a comedy club and there are comics that punch down, right? There are comics that are just mean to be mean, and they're not I think that's the most basic comedy, right? And now really the only time it's politically correct, of course, if it's directed at cisgendered white men, because you can pair them up, right? But there are comics that historically have just punched down and attacked people that they see as easy, and I think that is the like clean comedy, although typically the least funny, is probably the hardest to do, right? And you know, but
sure. And
go ahead.
Those comics are like the funny, like Jim Gaffigan. I think is just such a great example of like a clean comic who's like made me like pee my pants, like. There's just still something naughty. He's like able to do it without like any type of offensive language, but he's still naughty.
Right. But I would say from the outside looking in, that's probably the hardest comedy to do. And the easiest comedy is probably to just focus on widely accepted stereotypes that denigrate people for their immutable characteristics. But let's say you're in a comedy show and there's a comedian that just decides that he's going to start calling one of the people in the crowd's wife's ugly names or be ugly to her. Do you think that there is a line that a comedian can cross that he deserves the whipping, or do you think that comedians just off the table cannot be, they don't deserve a physical response or an even oral response to the words.
I mean, I think that, you know, it's a nuanced conversation and like there's different, you know, exceptions to different things. The worst punishment, if a comic is, if it's a real comedian,
right,
the worst feeling is silence.
Okay.
So if a comic is doing what you're literally saying and simply insulting someone and not in
and I've seen it, like, I'm not to me, but I've seen it happen. Like, I've had comics insult me. I'm 6'8". I don't care if people insult me, right? Like, I had one call me, like, skinhead Santa. Yeah, I'm 6'8", middle-aged white guy, right? But, yeah, you know, I think that...
They were probably proud of that alliteration. They were probably thought that was a really good one.
And I think I responded with that. I think they were just calling me Santa Claus. And I said, I'm not the skinhead Santa Claus, but whatever. And I try not to talk back. I don't care. But I'm also like a psychopath. Well, I shouldn't be crazy. Like, that's, I have problems, right? I grew up in a broken home. I'm damaged. I'm damaged goods. But I just wonder, because I don't think that Chris Rock crossed the line. I didn't find his criticism of Will's wife to be that far. And I think she has invited some of it with her. I don't listen to podcasts, but I like music, but the Red Table, I mean, she said some stuff that would be upsetting if I was her husband and would give fodder to a lot of comedians. But mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I wasn't super mad at Will. I was just shocked, but, and Chris seems real nice.
For me, it's like the whole notion of like, there's just certain things you don't say. There's just certain lines you don't cross.
Right.
It's like, maybe you don't, but like I do, like I'm having fun. Like I don't have to subscribe to your, like, whatever you say the rules are. Like, I don't care. Like, I'm going to do what I want.
Well, I think it's also very different with women, right? Like, I've seen some stories of women being attacked, women comedians, and that, especially by men physically. And that's completely a different thing, right? It's horrifying. Are you ever fearful on stage, or you just work and, you know, damn the consequence?
I'm like really funny. So my like crowd work is just, it's good. I'm very fast. Like, my wit is sharp. Like, people don't really have time to, it's never happened to me that somebody's been actually mad and like wanted to like charge the stage. Like, maybe a booker's been sent an email like, hey, that comic was a little too, you know, like maybe I triggered somebody or whatever, but who cares? But the only thing for me that I worry is when people are just too intoxicated and they are not, you know, they don't have their wits about them, to the extent that I feel a little nervous. Most clubs have really good security and, you know, eyes on people that are behaving like that, and they remove them before they're even a problem.
Well, and like The Stand, y'all, you got some manly comedians there, right? I mean,
that's the other thing. Like, I feel very safe around all of the guys that I work with, and I know if anything happened, like, listen, maybe somebody might get.
I mean, Colin's not fighting anyone, right? But
he would body slam someone if they touched me. Are you kidding? He would clothesline them.
I mean, that's the thing. You got tough New York guys around you. But I hate that, you know, you should, I mean, you also have Mabel. You could always have her go eat someone.
I do have Mabel. Yeah, but you just wonder if, like, hecklers behaved the way they behave at comedy shows, at Broadway shows, like, what would happen?
Yeah, I hate heckling, right? I find heckling to be and I love when they throw them out. Like, I think that's just driven by narcissism. People can't sit and listen to someone else. They want to participate in the conversation, right? I think if you've been engaged, it's one thing, right? If you've been engaged, you can respond.
Correct.
But yeah. I think it's a whole different thing if you haven't. Hey, we are running over time. Kieran, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Charles.
January 21st at Secret Group. Y'all go out to the show. This has been great fun.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.